The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, Episode 7.
Hey folks, welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. This is the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, and you can find and like this show and all of my social media buttons at culinarylibertarian.com/podcast. Head on over there and click my Facebook page or my Twitter buttons and drop me a line and say howdy. You can also support the show if you like what we're doing here with Bitcoin or PayPal or Patreon. And I've got some bonuses for Patreon supporters at the $3 or $5 level. You can check those out at the podcast page also. And if you wish, you can drop me a line, dan@culinarylibertarian.com. Let me know what you think, some ideas for something you would like to hear or some technique you'd like to learn. Thanks again for being here. Enjoy the show. Hey folks, today I'm talking to Sherry Voluntary. She's a friend of mine in my Facebook group, and we're talking Southern stuff. Southern culture, Southern food, Southern life, Southern food, Southern eating. You get the idea. We're going to talk about how food plays an important role in the bonds of family, how we can bring family back together with food, probably more things, but, you know, food for sure. Enjoy the show. We are here with my friend, and I hope your friend too, Sherry Voluntary. Sherry Hi there. Sherry has her own show, and she's going to tell you about that in just a minute. But Sherry and I are going to talk about food. And because Sherry is a fabulous Southern gal, we're going to talk about Southern food and some Southern traditions. And I have a trick question for her that she doesn't know about. So, hi, Sherry.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for coming on. This is kind of a quid pro quo, but at the same time, this is going to be fun.
Yeah, I think so.
So tell me just a little bit about your, well, Southernness, your culture, your heritage, where you're from, and because it's kind of ties into the thing, what does, this is a horrible thing to ask, I'm going to do it anyway, what does Southern mean to you?
Well, I'll tell you first about my background. So I grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which I think most people have heard of. It's, you know, from the very famous song. I lived there from, you know, around the South from my birth till I was 18, moved away, and then about 16 years ago, moved back to Tennessee. My family is Scottish, Irish, and Creek, Machis Creek. And so they're very rooted in the Southern cooking tradition. It's something that personally I love. People in the South tend to love to eat. It's one of our cultural big deals. We have tons of potlucks and, you know, we're just always getting together to eat and things like that. So there's hardly ever an event where there's not food present. And I particularly love to cook and eat. And I love those old Southern foods that maybe aren't as popular anymore or people don't know about. Or, you know, we've had there's a lot more diversity now in the South. So people move in with their own traditions and it kind of gets blended in. And your question was, what does Southern mean to me? I think there's a unique blending of cultures in the South, especially because of, from unfortunate reasons, the influx of Africans into the South, of course, through the slavery. But it added a real richness to Southern culture, I think. And then you had the big influx of Celtic groups that came down, plus the Native Americans that were already here. So there's this blending, like a beautiful blending of lots of different cultures that have sort of merged into this rich food. I call it poor people food, because most of those groups were not wealthy and they've tended to eat things like, you know, potatoes and field greens and things like that, that aren't very expensive, but have made them into these beautiful masterpieces of food. So that's a big part of being Southern to me. And think, you know, just a of defiance that I love about the South, that we are our own people and that we are proud of who we are. And there's a loyalty to being Southern that I don't think the rest of the country has. And I've lived all over the country, and there's a unique kind of pride in being Southern that maybe you get in like Boston or something, but we are proud people.
Yes. Now, there's a lot there, and I definitely agree with the pride of affiliation. And that's one of the things I think is very interesting. Well, it exists regionally in places. So you mentioned Boston, and so New England in general tends to, I think, identify as a big unit, but also Bostonians are very, very proud. There was in New Jersey a little bit, but New Jersey is very transient, so it was really hard to find a thread of New Jersey pride. But definitely, when my sister was in law school and visited there, I definitely felt that in Boston. I felt that in New York.
Pennsylvania,
but,
maybe Philadelphia. I mean,
I visited, but never really stayed there long enough to experience that. But one of the interesting ideas to me is how any of those places, but since we're talking about South, the traditions of the place, for whatever those reasons are, and you were right, the slave trade brought lots of tradition. And I think the idea of poor people food, even though it doesn't ring very nicely, I think it's very accurate. And it's a philosophy of making the most of what you have, not trying to have things you don't, or cook with things you don't have, or not even just cooking, just existing within your means. I guess that would be kind of the way I would phrase that. From a cooking standpoint, it's how do you make the most of what it is you've got? So we've got collard greens. Well, they grow well. This is one of the reasons the foods that are eaten in the South are eaten in the South is because that's what's there. So what do we do with this? That's an interesting point. And I think, and that's going to tie in with my question coming up. But right now, let's bring it back to Sherry. And what is or are some of your most favoritist, yes, I use that word, comfort foods? What really says, what is to you a culinary warm blanket?
Oh my gosh. Well, my mom's sausage gravy and biscuits is one. My mom is a wonderful cook. Like, she can cook so many things. Biscuits are not her specialty. So she usually, I'm telling on her and she's going to be mad, but she'll use canned biscuits. Eating her biscuits is like eating peanut butter a lot of times. Like, that's the only thing that she just like, cannot make. The woman is a brilliant cook, but her sausage gravy is amazing. So it totally makes up for it. My granny's banana pudding. There's no, like, she made it a couple years ago for a family thing she's like used Splenda or something like that because she's a diabetic or whatever. And I was like, Granny, you can't do this. Like, this is not acceptable. I had to come to Jesus meeting with her because I was like, when I come to, you know, Thanksgiving, I expect full on sugary banana pudding.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing down here. Like, everybody loves banana pudding. I think another greens for sure. Greens are like, when I say greens, I mean, you can have turnip or, you know, mixed greens or collard greens. Those are all great. My favorite are collard. And we also grew up eating something called poke salad. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Tell me.
It's a wild green. It grows. And my mom used to stop like on the middle of the freeway, pull over, and we'd get out and pick poke salad. So it's like a poor people food. It grows wild and you cook it up and it's a green. I haven't had it in a long time, but I remember eating it as a kid. And I'm trying to think some of the other really, like, my mom makes the best meatloaf in the world. Like, everybody else's meatloaf just stinks. But it's got like the savory sweet sauce that she makes and puts on it. It's really good. So I think another one that we eat particularly that I don't know are around the rest of the country so much are like broccoli casserole and squash casserole. Those are things we always have at our meals. Green beans, of course, fried okra, fried green
tomatoes. Oh, yes. You know, I want to interrupt you and tell you that on this side of the Rockies, you can't find okra of any kind.
I know.
We are a little put out.
Yeah, I lived in Colorado for 6 years. I tell you what, it's really, okra is a southern food. Like, I know they use it elsewhere, but, you know, the Africans introduced it, and it is a staple of southern cooking, and we put it in a lot of stuff. And like, there's, you know, fried okra is definitely one of those huge comfort foods that every southern cook should know how to make. Yeah.
Yes. My children adore it, and they why can't we have it? They pine for it.
Yeah.
So once in a while, I actually have a little bit left in the freezer that I made.
That's awesome. There's a restaurant here in town, and it's called Tupelo Honey's. I'm sure it's just regional or whatever. There's only two of them, I think, maybe, now that I'm thinking about it. But they make a blackened okra that is, it's so amazing. I've never had anything like it. It's like they slice it lengthwise, and they fry it up, and they blacken it in some kind of mixture. And it's incredible. It's super crunchy. And they're really known for their like southern, high-end southern cuisine. They've taken like these foods that are traditionally southern, you know, poor people food, and made them really beautiful dishes. So I really love that place.
I would never have considered blackened okra. I'm sort of no fan of the whole blackened thing to begin with, although I know it was just insanely popular back in the 80s.
Right.
But that's an interesting idea. So I don't know if my kids will eat the spice, but I like the idea.
I'm not a huge fan of most things blackened either. Like, I was surprised, right? I think a lot of it has to do with the texture of the okra. It fries up so crisp that you just like, I don't know, it's heaven.
No, those are the kinds of ideas that I'm interested in and I'm intrigued by. Mm-hmm. And that's enough to make me at least stop and pay attention for a few minutes because somebody thought of something really clever and creative.
Right. Yeah. If you want me to keep going with some comfort foods, there's a lot.
No. I just was, I was actually almost half expected you to list macaroni and cheese in your top five.
I was just about to say mac and cheese is a big I'm not particularly, like, if you make homemade macaroni and cheese, I'm all with you. But if it's out of the box, like,
no.
My husband's Canadian, and they call it Kraft dinner, and they love their boxed macaroni and cheese, and I think that's a travesty.
Well, it is. He's Canadian. The only thing he knows about is maple syrup and hockey.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I am poutine, maybe. I love that stuff. That's like a southern food. It really is. Gravy, cheese, and potatoes. Like, come on.
Man, so good. So, I'm all about the mac and cheese, homemade mac and cheese.
Yes. And pimento cheese is another one that down here a lot, and I love, and they've made some amazing things. Like, I had a burger the other day with pimento cheese on it.
Wow.
And it was incredible.
I just know we used to make the four little cocktail parties for the old farts at the retirement home, right? Pimento cheese sandwiches.
Exactly. But we grew up eating
our own, and it was, I mean, if you make your own pimento cheese mix, well, one, you can control the flavors you want, but my goodness. It's so good.
Yeah. And here, there's so many different brands of pimento cheese that, I mean, you don't even have, like, to get a really good one, you can actually buy it at the store. I think just because there's so many, you know, it's so many people eat it.
Right.
That we've got a lot of variety. Pimento cheese sandwiches are, that's one of those things. Like, I honestly don't cook a lot of the southern type foods anymore, just because my husband didn't grow up eating them. And so I cook a little differently, but when I really want, like, New Year's, I cook up the traditional New Year's food always. But those are things that I will have every once in a while, like a pimento cheese sandwich or something like that, that just are amazing. Or a tomato sandwich. That's a big thing down here.
Yeah, but you got to have
white bread,
spectacular tomatoes. And
yes,
that's a hard thing to find.
There's a county close to here called Granger County that has, it's kind of famous for their tomatoes. So we generally have fresh local tomatoes, when it's the season, and they're beautiful. Tomatoes are hard to get anymore. When I lived in Upper Michigan, I really was like, I longed for good produce because it's so far up there that everything is shipped green except for like apples and things that are up there. But
in Traverse City area, there was, when I was there, just scores of apple orchards and And you could find varieties of apples that are long forgotten
right.
by your local mega grocery store chain, and some amazing fruit, pears and plums and peaches and apples, and you have to know where they are, but that's
right.
And maybe increasingly that's becoming fewer and fewer.
Yeah, that's one of the things I know they talked about in, did you ever see The Botany of Desire?
I did not.
That book? It's an amazing book. And one of the things they talk about in there is how we are basically doing ourselves a harm by, you know, not having, I forget what they call it, maybe monoculture or something, where there's so many fewer varieties of food that, like bananas, you know, there are many varieties of bananas, but all we know of is a banana in the States. They're the, you know, the big yellow and maybe a plantain. But that's really harming. It's making them more susceptible to disease, for one. So when a disease comes through, there aren't as many varieties to kind of keep that population safe. And two, people just aren't as familiar with all the, you know, beautiful foods that there are to eat and the nutrient varieties and things like that. So it's an amazing documentary. This is the one I saw. It's based on the book. I haven't read the book, but it talks about cannabis, potatoes, tulips, and apples, and how they have intertwined and changed human history. It's really amazing. It's by the guy that the same guy, Pollard, I think his name, Pollard, the Omnivore's Dilemma guy.
Oh, Pollard, Michael Pollan.
Yeah, I think he's the same. I think it's the same author. It's a brilliant documentary. And I've always thought, oh, I need to read the book, but I haven't. I think it's a brilliant take, and I learned a lot. So anyway.
All right. Well, based on that recommendation, I will put that on the show notes page. You made a comment, and I'm going to spring off of that a little bit, about cooking for holidays.
Yes.
So with your Canuck husband and trying to appease, well, maybe he has accepted sort of the tradition. So in celebration of the second Thanksgiving, what is a must have on Sherry's Thanksgiving table?
I always make 7-layer salad. That's one of the things that I'm responsible for at our family dinners. And that's a big one. Ours is a little different down here. It's really has a bed of lettuce and peas. And then I make a homemade ranch dressing and onion, eggs, cheese, and bacon. And, that's a big one here. Green beans for sure. We love our green beans.
Do you do green bean casserole or just plain green beans?
We just do green beans, and we generally cook them with some onions and oil and a little vinegar, and that's our green beans.
Now, the vinegar is a Southern thing all the way, especially for collards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hot sauce and vinegar on our collard greens, for sure. Yeah. I'm trying to the casseroles I talked about, the broccoli casserole, squash casserole, those are all things that we always have. And generally there'll be like a pecan pie, and people or call it a Cairo pie, you know, things like that.
Wow. I'd forgotten about that term. Woo. That's time traveling there.
Yes. Some people still call it that. Like you'll hear them say Cairo pie. You're like, oh yeah, I guess that is a Cairo pie. So, usually pumpkin pie too. We have, I think we always have ham and turkey. Like, that's something my family does. I don't know if a lot of people do that, but I'm a ham person. Like you can leave the turkey all day. Turkey's okay. Like I like turkey lunch meat and stuff, but when it comes to like a meal like that, a big holiday meal, I want ham.
Well, that's all right. There's nothing wrong with ham. I'm a turkey fan. So we we go with the turkey thing for Thanksgiving, but we'll do probably ham for Christmas.
Yeah. And my mom, they make stuffing. But we don't make it because we want so much of it. Like she doesn't make it inside the turkey.
So you make dressing.
Dressing, yes. That's what, dressing.
Yes, we make dressing also.
We love the dressing. So my mom usually makes 2 pans of dressing because everybody needs dressing.
same thing. My wife would be, I mean, fine, let's have the green beans. Let's have, you know, let's have the turkey and stuff. But we're going to make a boatload of dressing, because yeah. I'll be perfectly happy with a big bowl of dressing slathered in gravy. You just yeah. put me in the corner and she's fine. Yeah. It's just like, that's what,
and so
from tradition, that is what her grandmother made. So her grandmother okay. taught her mother taught her, and they taught me. So now we make this dressing that's just spectacular. It's just got to have it. Just got to.
Watering.
We don't really need anything else. Just the dressing and some gravy and have some dessert. We're good to
and
go.
Leftovers. Yeah. So you got to have leftovers. One of my favorite things, and this is something that I've heard other people around the South here do. I like grape jelly or cranberry sauce on my dressing. And I also put it on my sausage, gravy, and biscuit. The grape jelly? Yeah.
Well, now that's a new one.
Yeah. I've heard other people around here do it. So I don't know. You know, we kind of generally have a sweet tooth here in the South. Here, so.
Well, that's true. No doubt about that. So that, you know, we go back to the history, and that's a lot for the sugar cane production. So because it's
yeah. My grandmother used to mix, like, after sun. We always had, like, my family all worked, right? There weren't a lot of times that we had sit down family dinners, but Sunday always had a family dinner, and my grandmother would cook. And I remember after breakfast, it was usually generally like a breakfast or a brunch, she would sit and mix molasses and butter and eat that on toast or something. Like, that's something that people used to do. I'm not a huge fan of molasses.
I think that idea is more common with Depression-era people than it is uniquely a Southern thing. And my support, tenuous though it is, for that idea is my grandfather in Detroit used to make molasses sandwiches. Now, Detroit's a big place for lots of things, including Wonder Bread. So pretty much everybody in Detroit ate white bread, and he had molasses sandwiches.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And there is no Southernness in the tradition of my family. They came from Poland and from France, and they boom, landed in Detroit, and that's where they stayed. So I think it is a product of need. What do we have? Yes. What can we afford? Molasses doesn't go bad. Right. And would have been, I have no idea with the availability or pricing, but I think that's just what we got. That's what we have.
Right.
All right. Kind of like the joke, we have a jam sandwich. Take two pieces of bread, right. Jam them together.
That's right. So. There is a Southern thing people do. They fry molasses. So
wow. No, I had not.
We can fry anything down here.
Well, that's true. I was in Tallahassee for most of my Southernness, so that it still qualifies, because, you know, as the map goes, it's Florida. As culture goes, it's just Southern Georgia. But it's kind of big city-ish compared to smaller towns, so we're a little bit elevated in our Southernness, I suppose.
Yeah. Georgia has a unique, like, because like you said, the further up you go, it's more just Southern Georgia culture. But the further down you go, not only do you have the influence of the Spanish cultures, but I mean, a lot of us don't really consider Florida to be a Southern. I mean, it is, but it's just because there's so many Yankees there.
Lots of them.
Yeah, so many people retire there, and Canadians. The Canadians love Florida, and that you don't get a lot unless you've got old back, you know, like country Florida people, Floridians. Then it's not generally very similar in culture to a lot of the rest of the South.
I think that is mostly a true statement for the metropolitan areas, Tampa, yeah, Orlando, sure. Miami, I mean the entire South, right. From Naples to Miami, Jacksonville, St. Augustine, Tallahassee. But if you get into the middle of the state,
right.
Towns like Bushnell, where
Belle-Glade.
Nary a Yankee has been found.
Right.
And so my wife has family there. That's why I know the town. It's not, I'm not cheating. Yeah.
No, that's fine. Yeah. You have to get out of the urban areas to get to real Southern Florida, like traditions.
Yep.
So, and they have unique ones. So
yes, they do. Venison jerky being one of them, which I love. They do. I get some every year. So good.
We have a lot of that around here. Venison is still a big thing because we have so many hunters, you know. Hunting is a big, you know, there, like I said, their culture changes here just like everywhere else. There's not a lot of PETA protests around here and stuff like
no, not too many. So I was going to ask you, and I'm going to jump ahead in my little list here, but you mentioned two times biscuits and gravy. And my question to you was going to be, which one's better, shrimp and grits or biscuits and gravy? But I feel like that question's been answered already.
I am not a seafood person. So, and I don't, this is, people are going to get mad at me. I don't like grits.
What?
I don't like watermelon either.
I don't care about that, but grits?
Well, my mom does. Like when I was a kid, I didn't really care for sweet tea, which now I love, but, and I didn't
There's
like
another kind.
Like, exactly. Right. And I didn't really like, I can eat watermelon. It doesn't make me sick, but I just would rather not. Like, it's boring. I'm not a real bland. Like, if it's bland, I don't really generally like it. So grits is what, but you know, I love cream of wheat, which is strange because they're very similar, but give me cream of wheat all day. So I'll eat cream of wheat instead of grits.
Well, I think your Southernness is going to come into question.
I know. That's the thing. All day, every day, sausage, biscuits, and gravy, or just biscuits and honey and butter. Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh, that's the best dessert ever. Or
I
sweet
agree.
Cornbread. I love that too. Cornbread and milk. I don't know. Have you ever heard anybody eating that?
Cornbread and milk?
Yeah.
Not like on purpose, I'm going to have these two things together as my plan, but I've had cornbread with milk because, especially if it's not freshly made cornbread, it tends to be a little bit dry, so you need to do something to it. So the milk is a more reasonable choice to me because of the fat content than water. Now, tea possibly, but I don't think so. I think for me that the most reasonable choice would be milk because it's together.
I don't know if that's a Southern thing or just my family thing. But we will take a glass of milk and put cornbread in it and eat it with a spoon.
How interesting.
Yeah. I haven't done that in years, but my big mama, I remember we used to do that. And I don't know if it was, you know, she raised 14 kids. So I don't know if it's a thing of, you know, she cooked a lot of food and, you know, the cornbread there would be a lot of it and it would probably dry out. And that's, I'm wondering if that's where it came from, but I imagine it's probably a bigger Southern thing. She was Creek as well. So I don't know if it comes from them or.
I don't know. At least it's a good family story.
Yeah. Interesting. A barbecue is another one. Like,
oh, well, yeah. So barbecue for real. I'm not just a grill. Yeah. That's not barbecue.
No.
Big difference.
Yeah. We have a very unique Southern New Year's tradition.
Yes.
That most people have never heard about. And that is we eat black-eyed peas and greens, collard greens any kind of greens, really. But I use collard greens on New Year's. That's a huge Southern tradition. A lot of people still do it. And it's for good luck. So we consider that like it's all superstition, right? And my family doesn't quite take that necessarily as seriously. But they still do it. They still cook their greens and some either just plain black eyed peas or a dish with black eyed peas in it called Hoppin' John.
Yes.
And, which I absolutely love. We also make pot liquor. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm not, but I want to know. Tell me.
It's a soup off of the water from greens. So you make a soup called pot liquor with the stuff that comes off the green.
Huh.
So I usually make greens, pot liquor, and Hoppin' John. Those are, which they're all kind of the similar ingredients in the Hoppin' John and the pot liquor and stuff, but I make them both because I like it so much.
Well, that's okay. You know, we had sort of talked a little bit about making the most of what you've got. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking a little bit, I think the idea of putting the cornbread in the milk and using the liquid from cooking the greens are really good examples of being frugal. In the years I've been studying food, one of the things that I've come up against is certainly in the rural parts of Europe, just nothing goes to waste. So when you're a butcher, next to nothing on the pig is not used. It's either the hair for hairbrushes. There's things to do with the skin. As far as meat goes, all of it's edible somehow in some way. Mm-hmm. That sense of frugality is to some degree part of everyone's culture for that culture. And so some of it might be shared, but you begin mm-hmm. having identity based on those things. So chitterlings is a big Southern thing, which there's a food I won't touch. That's the one.
Yeah, they're good, though.
Well,
I haven't had them in years, but I just grew up eating them.
My big surprise question for you comes a little bit from that. And so the question is, have we, as a people, either of our states or as the country, lost some of our grounding and our connection to our place due to a lack or a loss of our cooking skills, or also the loss of family dining time?
I would answer absolutely yes. And I think here's where it goes, is that it's not necessary to have those cultural traditions around. Like, they're not a need as far as that goes for your life. You can live just fine. But there's something to be said for having a, this is us and we belong because we're insiders in this group. I remember reading a child rearing book years ago. And one of the things that the man said was, look, one of the ways that I make my kids, or I try to invest, you know, instill in my kids that they are, so like with me, they are Clark. They are, you know, voluntaries. They're clerks, and they belong here. They belong with us. And, you know, out there in the world, you wherever you go, you're still a Clark and you belong here. This is your place. You can always come back. And, you know, you're special because of that. That's your unique fit. And I think that's one of the things that especially our cultural traditions around food really add a depth to our lives and an interconnectedness that I think builds community that so many people are missing these days. And I think that's a lot of what people long for when they're out looking for groups and things, is actually just community. I don't think there's a lot of those around anymore. I know I was watching some documentaries on like Orthodox Jews and Hasidic Jews and things recently. And one of the things I thought was so beautiful was that these young people, they were getting together. It was like a young singles Orthodox Jew group. And they were sitting around, the young men and women at the table, and they were singing songs together at the table, enjoying their meal together at the table. And just like there was such a richness to it, such a family feeling. And like, you know, they had all moved to like California or somewhere. These are people that didn't necessarily grow up together, but they had these traditions to come together around again and feel that comfort of home and something that they were familiar with. And I think those things are really beautiful, and they give us depth as people and uniqueness. We can feel like, hey, you know what? I might not be this, but I'm this, and this is special too. And I think it's really important.
I agree with you. And I was thinking as you were telling that story, I think there's, and this is a giant idea that I really can't substantiate, but I think that it has some validity, that those American traditions, and that sort of balk at the phrase, back at the 50s. And so everyone likes to pile up on the 50s because it was, you know, all these terrible, horrible things that, you know, my gosh, they ate dinner as a family. Okay, so, you know, mom stayed home and dad went to work. I'm not interested in the nitpicking of separation and finding labels to assign because you don't like something. I think there's something to be observed in a family that was part of a neighborhood that made itself a community and shared a community's sense of pride and ownership by going to a place every day or every weekday. And that happened to be going to church on Sundays or if you're going to the synagogue on Saturdays. I'm not in a position to say that we all need to be religious, because that's not my position. But I can definitely recognize a loss of a thing, and that would be a loss of community because of the loss of this sort of sense of identity. And I phrased the question about people of our states on purpose, going back to Jefferson and where your state was your nation, and your nation really wasn't even the state. It was as far as you could see. So for Jefferson or Madison, it was your estate. It was your place. And of course, now I want the names of the plantations. I can't think of them. But that existed for everybody there. I think we would do fairly well to get some sense of that back. And so as a resident of my block, I know who my neighbors are and we're civil when we see each other, but
right.
I don't go there. I don't spend time there. We don't have outside barbecues. We don't really do much. I acknowledge them when I see them. And at Christmas time, I'll bring them some goodies because I want to be the good neighbor one day out of 365. Well, that's not true. I do something for Halloween too. I trick them, but with goodies, not with bad things. Right. But I think there's a loss of a thing. Or maybe a couple of the things. And I don't think it's easy to identify, or it might be easier to say, this is what I think it is, but I don't think it's easy to fix. But I feel like I think we have lost something for it. And I think you made the observation that you think that's what, young people's relative phrase, but people, I think, are pining for some sense of something, even if they can't really identify it. And so this is a really big thought, probably worthy of career study for somebody, which won't be me, but I think there's something there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always interested in, sociology type things. And, I think John Taylor Gatto, even though he was talking about education more specifically in his writings, he also talked a lot about community and community versus networks. And I think we have in this country a bunch of networks that we call community that aren't really communities anymore. And people are longing for that. And I think that, there are many things that you can give, a hard time to, like, this multiculturalism for. But I think that's one of them, is that we've put sort of this emphasis on the other in other cultures, learning about other cultures and being open to them. And that's a wonderful thing on its own. Like, I'm a person who believes in taking in and enjoying other traditions. But I think we've kind of de-emphasized our own cultures, and especially in the South. And this is something that a lot of Southerners still feel. And I think it comes from, Reconstruction, the Civil War and Reconstruction afterwards. That was a really terrible time. Since then, you've had like this demeaning of Southernness and Southern culture. And it's sort of made us cling, I think, even more to it and feel a big resentment towards maybe other people, because the way we're portrayed often, if there's a stupid character in a show, it's usually got a Southern accent and, stuff like that. And we're not dumb. we do have our different ways of looking at things. And I say we as the South, even within the South, there's a lot of different. New Orleans is very different than Chattanooga, where I grew up, or Knoxville, where I live now. Knoxville and Chattanooga are very different. There's many other cultures in the South, but as a whole Southern culture, we've had to fight to stand and be proud of who we are, I think. And just say, being Southern does not equal being racist. We have these cultures that, maybe you look down on, maybe our clogging is funny to you, or the nasal, bluegrass singing is funny to you, whatever. But these are things that we hold dear and we prize, and they come from somewhere, and we come from somewhere, and we're proud to be from those places. So I think that's something that more people could use. And I mean, I even long for community now. I don't have the kind of community I had growing up in the little company town that I grew up in. So I think most people miss it these days.
No, I think that's right. And your points about Southernness, I think, are spot on. Brian McClanahan goes so far as to suggest, I won't put words in his mouth, but to suggest that to be Southern was to properly be an American. Also, he's got a couple books out, him and Clyde Wilson. But all right, so let me lighten this up a little bit, and to still sort of keep the idea of community, but let's get a little bit fun. What do you do with your kids in terms of sharing food and teaching them to cook or teaching them to bake? Do you do Thanksgiving cookies or Christmas cookies?
Yeah, so my little daughter, she just turned 8, she loves to make those. And these aren't necessarily Southern. They're top of stove cookies. They're like the easiest cookies to make in the world, but they're really tasty. Do you know what I'm referring to? They might have a different name.
Like a no-bake cookie?
Yeah, no-bake cookies. Yeah. She loves to make those. That's something we make pretty frequently together. She'll say, oh, can we make some cookies? So that's simple and quick.
Those one with the haystacks, the crunchy ones with the...
Yeah, these are, we make them with oatmeal and like instant oatmeal and a stick of butter. I think it might be a stick and a half. It's got a lot of butter in it and a couple cups of sugar and a bunch of cocoa. And you boil up the, oh, and peanut butter. There's peanut butter in it too. You make a kind of a syrup of the butter and sugar and peanut butter. And then at the end, you add in the oatmeal and you mix it up and then you drop it onto wax paper and let it cool. So good. They're just simple, but they're really good. She loves to make those, but I'm trying to think of some of the things that we make together. Divinity is one of the things I like to make.
Really?
Yeah. Around Christmas, I usually make some divinity or
stuff. That takes some skill.
Yeah. I have had many that didn't come out.
Well, that's sugar for you.
Yeah. And, one of the things that I do in particular that my family loves is I make candied like orange peel.
Yeah, love that.
I've done it with lemon and grapefruit as well.
Oh yeah, I love bitter. I don't really care for candied grapefruit, but candied lemon and orange, now that's good stuff.
Yeah, my family really enjoys it. Especially my granny and my mom. They're always, are you going to make us some candied, you know, peel this year?
Why, yes, granny, of course I am.
Yeah, and that's something our family does together. We like to, like most of my aunts, we will make like a tins of different cookies and things to give to people. And we usually exchange those as a family too. Like it's a here, happy holidays kind of thing.
Yeah.
It'll have like chess bars and things like that in it. I made some mints last year, cream cheese mints.
Nice.
And I think I'll start doing those all the time. But I always try to include my kids in cooking. My daughter especially loves it. My son, he loves to juice. He makes all these incredible juices and he brews kombucha. And
really?
He's also, yeah, and he's brewing mead now.
Nice.
Yeah, he's 15 and he's very much into learning all of it. He's been doing kombucha for a few years now and we love that stuff. And it's so good for you. And recently he got into mead, which I like a good drink. So we'll see how that turns out. But he's learned so much and I really try to encourage any kind of skill that is not just for fun, but they're actually learning something.
Right.
He does a lot of aquarium stuff too. That's one of it. But I didn't start him in that or the kombucha. It's just something that he's always been interested in, fungus and molds and things like that. So yeah, I guess part of the homeschooling, I just try to encourage whatever they're already interested in. And so my son loves the juice.
From a fermentation aspect, it would be a good experiment. And also, if it works out well, a yummy, tasty one to do some kimchi.
Yes. Sauerkraut is something we love.
Oh. I love good sauerkraut. Some carrot seeds.
Yes. And my mom makes it in these big buckets.
Yeah. Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah. And any kind of fermented, you can make fermented mayonnaise and fermented pickled beets and all kinds of things. So I'd like to get more into that as I have some time. But my son really is into those kind of things. And so he does a lot more of that stuff. But my daughter, she really likes to bake, you know, and she's 8. So she likes to measure. And she's recently getting into putting stuff in and out of the oven.
That's got to be careful, but that's an important step.
Yeah. So eggs are another thing that my son's been making eggs probably since he was 6 or 7. He eats eggs every day. Like I can hardly keep them in eggs. We've tried so many different kinds of eggs too, because I get tired of them, but he can eat them all the time. So I usually buy eggs by the 5 to 7 dozen at a time. We eat a lot of eggs. Yeah.
Poached. Sounds like your next experiment should be raising chickens.
Ronan, my son, has talked about it. I would like to. It's a matter of time, you know, just the time and care for things. I'm a cat person because they're not very needy, right? They just, yeah, I would love to do that. We have the room here on our property, and the way our county is zoned, we could do chickens. Some of our neighbors do have them. So I would love to try it sometime, but just a lot of, you know.
My sister's got, I don't know, 20 of them, and she just gets... She gets a lot of eggs, and she sells the excess, but they seem to be mostly self-sufficient, but they need some attention now and again. But she just likes having them, and she gets the eggs, and she's just finds a therapy and going and talking to the chickens.
Yeah, I have several friends who raise chickens, and they really love them. They become almost like pets in a way, because they know their personalities, and so
yeah,
it's nice.
I mean, chickens have personality, isn't that weird?
Yeah. My great grandmother, my big mama, as I call her, she always had chickens, and she killed her own chickens. You know, that's something that people don't have those skills anymore, but she could slaughter just about any animal, honestly. She grew up doing it. So, yeah, I know one of the Western Indian tribes, they have a beauty pageant that they do for their tribe. And one of the skills they have to do is to kill a cow traditionally, or a sheep or something like that, that's traditionally slaughter and dress this animal, which is
wow.
really cool. Yeah, it keeps their tradition alive. It might be the Hopi. I'm not sure, but I think those skills are important, and I would love to have more of them, but I don't, unfortunately. But I've thought, my mom and I have often thought of opening like a school, like just at our, you know, like a skills school of those kind of things, because she knows how to do some of that stuff. So,
well, that is definitely a lost art. There's no doubt about it. I mean, making your own sauerkraut is one thing, but knowing how to dispatch an animal and make a steak out of it, that's a whole other ballgame.
Yeah. I grew up watching my dad, like he would often take us hunting with him. And for me growing up, I grew up very poor. So We were homeless several times as a kid, and we did hunt to survive. Like, that's one of the things. We used to go frog gigging and ate squirrel and rabbit and all those things, venison, of course, all that stuff. And so I grew up seeing animals slaughtered, you know, from shooting them to dress, you know, field dressing them to coming home, my mom preparing them. Like, I know where stuff comes from, and I've always tried to, even though I don't do those things with my kids, I always tried to, when they were little, tell them, now this was alive. This was something that was living, and now it's on our table, and we're thankful for that. But I didn't want them to be disconnected. I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, they're not vegetarians or anything. They eat meat, but they feel like, it's almost like they look down on the slaughter of animals. And I'm thinking, this is
interesting.
Yeah. And it sort of, it bothers me. And I don't know if it's the native in me, but I feel like you should honor the fact that something gave its life for you to eat.
Well, I think there's a disconnect between how something ended up on that little green piece of styrofoam wrapped in plastic.
Yeah, exactly. I think more people are starting to appreciate it more, but got a long way to go.
At least be hopeful. I don't know, but that's, I hope that you're right about that.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, last question was about the cooking and sharing traditions, which you already answered for me. And that was really what I wanted to know.
Can I just tell you some of the foods as well that I left out? Just real quick. People are going to really experience Southern food. I would love for them to try these things. A potato salad is one. I know there's lots of different varieties of potato salad, but my family in particular has a special one, and we put green olives in it, and it's mustard potato salad, but instead of pickles or anything like that, or celery, we put green olives.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then the traditional Southern deviled egg is like a staple at all our meals, and it's got sweet relish in it. You have to use sweet relish. So, that's one of the other ones. And RC Colas and moon pies. That moon pies come from Chattanooga. They're made there. That's where they came from. So I grew up loving. That's like a Southern tradition to get an RC Cola and a moon pie. You still get RC Cola. You can, but I don't really drink it. So
I don't drink sodas anymore at all. But I remember seeing RC Colas and
So there's like also catfish is still a big thing. We love our catfish down here.
Farm catfish is good stuff.
Yeah, it's good. And then I'm trying to think. Oh, red eye gravy is something that I think is making a comeback. But
that's not for the week, baby.
Southern thing.
Yeah, it is a very Southern thing, but that you can't be timid and eat red eye. You need to have some fortitude for that stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those necessity things you were talking about. Like, they didn't throw out day old coffee. If it didn't get drank, it got used.
Yeah.
Corned beef hash is another thing we love to eat. Hush puppies.
Oh, hush puppies are awesome.
Yeah. Boiled peanut.
When they're fresh out of the water and warm, then I like them. When they get cool and gotta be hot. When they're hot, they're fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of them. My kids like them a lot. But they, you know, that's one of those things that's very Southern, and it comes from that African tradition. Peanuts are a big part of African culture.
Yes.
And it's one of those things that's become traditionally Southern now, like boiled peanuts.
All right, Sherry. So as we are getting ready to wind up here, the unfair task is, can you sort of coalesce the vapors, to borrow a line, of what it means to you to be Southern and the family and culture and food traditions of that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, family is what I really think of when I think about that, and community, because I think that's a lot of what the South, you know, is known for. And people talk about how, you know, we're very hospitable and things like that. And really, I think what they're saying is that, you know, we have these communities that we love to welcome people into, and we want to share our culture with them. We love to eat in general. You know, I know this is speaking in, as if all Southern people are the same, and they're, of course, not. But in general, most Southern people really do love to eat and enjoy, not just eat, but have enjoyed the time with family. I think that it also kind of harkens to the slower pace of life. Southerners have traditionally had a slower pace of life. I don't know that that's so much the case anymore, but I think that's attributable to the family time that we want to spend around the dinner table or together playing music or whatever we're doing. And so I think that that's, like, I remember times with my at all my grandparents' house where the women would go in and cook and the kids would run around playing in the yard and the men would play horseshoes, you know, and we'd just spend the day together. For me, that's what I remember about and love about being Southern. I would really love to keep that around and make that a thing again, and just the community of that and the beauty of actually living together, living our lives together where we know each other, where we experience real life together, and, you know, hang out and aren't so obsessed with, you know, missing out on the fast things going on in the world.
That is a fabulous goal. And the lure of the other thing has been a powerful drive, I think, probably for more generations than we can imagine. The proverbial stop and smell the roses sounds like a pretty good way to live a life.
I agree.
Do you have some websites or some contact information that you'd like to share so people can find out more about you and the projects you have going on?
Yeah. So I, of course, am on Facebook under Sherry Voluntary and the Sherry Voluntary Show. Also, you can check out Little L Productions, which is a production company that my dear friends Alan Mosley and Mike Meharry and I have started together. And we have on there my other show, which is Postcards from Somalia, as well as a new show by Mike Meharry called Godarchy, because he's a Christian anarchist. He's taken his blog and is now making it into a podcast. And we also have, of course, The Gold Standard with Alan Mosley, which is just a fantastic show. I love Alan's show. I think he's probably one of the most natural hosts ever. He's just a natural at it. And of course, the Sherry Voluntary Show, which is mine. And you can check all that out mostly on Facebook. We're also on YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, all that stuff. Twitter. I'm at Sherry Voluntary on Twitter. So check it out.
Folks, if you want to cook Southern food, like Sherry was talking about, oh, fried catfish or even pan-fried okra, you need the right pan. Smithy Ironware Company makes cast iron cookware in the South, right in South Carolina. So you can cook to your Southern heart's content, even if you're not in the South. Excellent cookware for excellent victuals. CulinaryLibertarian.com/cast iron will take you to the sales page, and Christmas is coming.